Hey folks, Eddie Gans here. So as promised, here is part two of the Yacht Rock Show exclusive interview with legendary producer, guitar player, Mr. Jay Graydon. Enjoy.
So you said before you were jealous of that kid that had perfect pitch. Do you not have perfect pitch?
No, and here's that story. When I first started playing guitar at age 14, I played drums first for about 6 months. And guys that are in my junior high school, we jammed at my pad. They left their guitars. They played surf tunes because we were going to jam the next day. So I picked up one of the guitars after they split, and I figured out how to play all the songs. And I go, well, maybe I should be a guitar player. So I hustled bowling. That's how I made my money back then. I would have been a professional bowler if I didn't discover music. Honestly,
that's funny.
Yeah. So at age 11, man, I'm gambling. I mean, and I'm always coming out ahead. I wouldn't bowl anybody I couldn't beat. So we'd play a game called We Fish Him In. I'd let him win one out of three games so the guy wouldn't go away until I got all of his money, you know,
like a pool shark.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, man, I saved up and bought the guitar. And then where's this going? What was the question?
Perfect pitch.
Oh, yeah. So then I was hanging out with this band, the guys older than me by about 3 or 4 years, and the bass player had perfect pitch. I had no idea what that was. And I said, Jim, well, can you write the chords out to Misty for me? You know, I'm just a beginner. I don't know what I'm doing hardly. And he says, yeah, but, you know, you can develop relative pitch. And I said, well, how do I do that? Well, he says, you'll learn the intervals. Well, yeah. I got my relative pitch to the point where I can pretty much do a takedown in real time as long as it doesn't get too complicated or too fast.
Yeah.
Like, this is around a C. C. Does anybody have a guitar around? Yeah.
You got a guitar, Joe?
No, it's in the other room.
It could be a B. C. C.
Yeah, I don't know if somebody asked me that the other day. I don't think I have a perfect pitch either.
Well, do you have a guitar around?
I don't.
Let me see. Hang on.
Joe, you
I can get
Joe
one.
Does.
Yeah, get one.
All right,
you're
hold
the
on.
Guitar player. You
yeah, hold on. There? Why isn't there one in this room?
I'm sure that's why I'm shocked. Yeah, I had a tuner next to me, so you're pretty close, Jay.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm back, and here's C.
Oh,
I was,
yeah.
If anything, wow. I was cut here under. Okay, right. From now on, any note you sing to me, I can tell you what it is.
After knowing that, right? That's relative pitch.
That's the start point.
Yeah.
So if I don't know, if I haven't had a chance to get my C, sometimes I'm a half step flat, but... now
yeah, I noticed
that
as I get older
see?
That happens.
What's that?
As I got older, that happened to me too. I remember I would take out a song, I would learn something away from like a radio tune, and I'd go back to the and try to learn it, and I'd be right on as I was younger. But now I'm like a half step off.
Well,
I don't know whether
this.
It's sharp or flat. I don't know why that's happening.
All my buddies with perfect pitch, including Foster, except for Jerry Hay, their perfect pitch is waning. Foster's lost it.
Look at that.
Oh, wow.
And all my other buddies that are a little younger are going crazy because it's starting to go away. And they're so used to and spoiled to it, they're fucked.
Wow.
You know, I said, well, David, I'll teach you relative pitch. He says, well, I don't know how to deal with that. I said, come on, man. Really?
Yeah.
I know.
I'm sure that's learnable at his stage.
So
do you know the name Ira Siegel, guitar player from New York?
No.
Ira's lefty guitar player, toured with Madonna.
Badass.
No.
He was on a session with us, and I wanted to quit because he sat there without a guitar in his hand, and we ran the tape.
And he just wrote it out.
He wrote it out.
Yeah,
let me tell you, with extensions and
right.
inversions and everything. I mean,
a motherfucker.
He just write down.
There's different degrees of perfect pitch, too. Foster and Jerry Hay and this guy named Amen Batia were in my studio.
Oh, Batia, yeah. We talked about him with Steve Picaro, Batia. Remember the Batia film, Ed, from Fahrenheit?
Oh, yeah.
He did the sample on Fahrenheit. Yeah.
Right.
He is an excellent musician, writer. He's been doing films. Yeah, you know, I saw Steve Picaro. We went to dinner the other night, and we talked about Amen. Anyway, he was over here because he had won something that Foster and Page had judged, and Jerry was over to get a tune for me to write horn parts to. So I got three guys with perfect pitch, and on my piano, I'm playing polytonal shit that's so left field, you know, it's insane. Okay. Foster was the slowest. Jerry, who would usually be the fastest, were left in the dust by Amen.
Wow.
This cat would name every note like cluster, B flat, C, D, F, G, an octave higher, and yeah, but just name all the notes, bam. Mm-hmm.
In
like
the chord.
Faster than anybody.
Wow.
So there's different degrees.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm jealous of them all.
Yeah, all me too. Degrees. Hey, man, believe me. I, you know, and the greatest thing about relative pitch is you can practice it, man, when you're doing anything. If your music's on, practice it.
Right.
When I'm watching movies, I'm thinking of the chord changes in the melody. I'll get the C off my whistle, or I'll, you know, get it off a guitar, or I'll get it off the garage band. And while I'm watching the movie, man, I'm following around the melodic structure. Mm. Then when it gets too difficult and it goes to a left field turn, then I'll back up the film, get the pitch of the new tonal center, and take it from there.
And everybody else in the room says, hey, wait, I was watching that.
No, it's just me, man. My
That's funny.
My girlfriend, she can't, because old man ears, you know, she can't take the volume, and I have to ride the volume for her. And it's just like, you know, it's just too loud, it's too loud. I'm going fucking hitting the button as fast as I can.
Is that your sly way of telling us that your girlfriend is much younger than you so we could all be jealous?
No, she's 2 years younger than me.
Oh,
okay.
She's an old girlfriend from my youth because the previous girlfriend I had defines the word cunt.
Whoa.
And I would never go out with a chick I didn't know again, so I vacillated to all my old girlfriends. And of course, I went out with the ones that were trophy chicks when they were young.
Sure.
And they're still fucking crazy, but they weren't dangerous. This was the only old girlfriend that has her shit together, you know?
Gotcha.
Yeah, man. And you know what? It really is the Hey 19 thing because, you know, I mean, these cats that are marrying these young chicks, man.
What do they know about your history and the stuff you love? And it just makes no sense.
Right. My girlfriend, you know, loves all my music, you know. She always has.
Yeah,
and she's tone deaf, which makes it really good.
Oh, shit.
You know, when she sings, it's fucking hysterical, man.
Oh, that's funny.
It's funny. You know, it's hysterical.
And grating at the same time, too.
Yeah. Well, all I can do is laugh my ass off. And she knows it. She gets it, you know.
Funny.
Let me finish the thought.
Go ahead.
Because of this and this technique I developed over the years, I'm going to do a instructional video on my way of learning relative pitch and how to practice, along with a million exercises to use to check your pitch. And, you know, I got to do it, man. It's time for me to teach. I got to give back. It's time.
Cool.
I got to do what Rick Beato's doing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Definitely, man. Listen, I love what you did, Manhattan Transfer Extensions. Love what you did there.
Yeah, it's a good
there.
Album.
Woo! And I love the version.
Yeah, it's a good album.
Yeah. I love what Nothing You Can Do About It. Their version, pretty slamming.
Yeah, we love that tune.
Funny that. You bring that up.
Really?
Funny you bring that up. Because the Manhattan Transfer are doing an album with a German pop symphony orchestra. And they re-recorded Twilight Tone, Twilight Zone, and Nothing You Can Do About It. And I just finished playing the solos the other day.
Oh, wow.
And that guitar solo that you did is slamming.
Well, you're going to like it better now.
Really?
Yeah, and the solo on Twilight Zone, I really... tricked it out, man, and got deeper into the harmonies near the end.
Oh my God.
Yeah, man. It
wow.
was
it,
that's what makes me play. If I'm not made to play, I won't play. And it wasn't easy, man. When I started, I had like took me about 4 or 5 days to get the Twilight Zone thing up to speed, man. It was fucking hard.
No shit. Wow.
You get old and you don't practice, man. Shit gets fucked up, you know.
So they wanted it note for note, or did you improvise anything new?
Yeah, I added some new stuff, a few things on both of them.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, Alan from the Transfer, who called me, Mm-hmm. When I originally played the solo, he'd walked into the studio. You know, I played it in the afternoon. They came in at night, and I played him the solo, man, and he says, I hate it.
Really?
I said, Alan. Yep. I said, Alan, you don't get a vote here, okay?
Holy shit.
Yeah, man. And so then he calls me up a month ago and says, you know, we wrote the Twilight Tone thing together, and he says, I want you to play the solo, you know? And I said, well, you don't hate it anymore? I knew he didn't hate it. He, you know, realized yeah, yeah. that it was good, right?
Right.
And he says, no, man, play it, play it, play it. So I said, all right, I'll do it for you guys. So that'll be out in a couple of months. We'll see how that goes.
I'm looking forward to that, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
Jay, you did, how many albums did you produce for The Transfer?
Two.
Okay, Mecca for Moderns and Extensions?
Yeah.
Excellent. Yep. Birdland. Unfucking believable. Unfucking believable.
That's the Grammy.
That's the third Grammy, right? I was going to say.
Yeah. Now, listen to this story, cats. Okay. Both Twilight Tone and Birdland was up for best arrangement for a duo or group, you know. And when Janice was writing out the arrangement, you know, she doesn't have the ears I have. I mean, she's got good ears, but she's not hip to the complex voicings. And she couldn't figure out three sections of the original. And she would come over and say, Jay, what's this? And I'd go to the Fender Rhodes and I'd play it for her. And I'd go, give me a manuscript. I'll write it out. And then that happened 3 days in a row. And at the end, she says, well, do you want arranging credit? And I said, nah, I wasn't thinking. I did a lot of work for her on it.
Oh, wow.
I wasn't thinking. I said, no. Well, here we come. There's the Grammys. She wins.
Yeah.
And so I said, Janice, okay, she's doing a version of Mornin' with Greg. What's Greg's name in the Take Six? Mark Kibble.
Okay. And Take Mark Six. Cable. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just got the tape, the files tonight. I got to play the guitar parts for them on Mornin'. They're doing a version for a vocalese with Mark and Janice and some other singer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, for fun, you know, I think it's just an online thing.
Right.
And so when she called me to do that, I said, Janice, would you write a letter to Nartz and see if I can get the Grammy? Because you said I could have it. She says, absolutely. You know, they said you need to do it in the first year, so...
Right.
At least I have the story.
Wow, that's a great story.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, they'd be able to overturn that if it was within the first year of winning it.
Yeah. I didn't think about it and I fucked up.
Yeah. It's not what you're about, though.
No, I fucked up,
yeah.
man.
Yeah.
I know. I know. I fucked up.
So, bro, how was it working with Al Jarreau?
Yeah.
Al was, he, you know, every singer that I ever worked with, man, you know, except for George Benson and Rich Page and, believe it or not, Donny Osmond.
Oh, I was just going to say Donny, because I know you're a fan of Donny, man. That's
well,
so
we did an album.
Crazy.
He's a great singer.
We did an album.
Whatever happened with that? Oh, really?
It's a long story, man.
Oh,
it's too
man.
Bad.
You mean there's a full album?
Seven tunes. We never got farther. We had a deal, and the deal fell through. It's by... For some reason, then I got real busy. It was all
right.
fucking drag. Anyway, whenever I worked the singers, man, they'd always bitch that I worked them hard. And I go, look, guys, you know, you're all great. Every singer was a great singer that I worked with.
Right.
So you can, you know, I want it to be in tune, don't you? You know, yeah. isn't that the point? To be really in tune and feel really good
yeah.
and have a track that's tight but feels good.
Sure.
I mean, isn't that really the
That's
goal?
The point.
Absolutely.
Right. So I worked them hard. And, you know, record them on seven different tracks. And, you know, I had a whole way of scoring each line. And, you know, I had numbers next to each vocal line. And I'd fill up the tracks. And if there weren't a lot of nines, nine and a half for each pass, when we were basically done with the seven tracks punching in a lot, then I'd go back and catch a few lines where I thought I may not have what I need to put it together.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd split and I'd comp it. So, you know, but there's never more than a night on a vocal. It could take 5, 6, 7 hours, you know.
Yeah.
And let them take breaks. On Mornin', the high note, the high A in the bridge.
Yeah.
I knew Al. Yeah, he was going to have a problem singing that, but the tune didn't sound good in C or D flat. It really sounded right in D. So I said, Al, when we're doing vocals, don't worry about the last line. The line that says, "And reach out and touch the face of God," that ends on the high A, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a sustain for like five or six bars while it's fading down. So I said, Al, we'll take a night off. Do your best not to talk that day. When you come in, do your warm-ups like you always do. And just give me three tracks. Just give me three tracks. Whatever it is, I'll live with it. You know, if we have to do it falsetto, we will. But his falsetto didn't match his voice well. It wasn't powerful. Mm. Well, the second pass, man, he nailed it. I did a third one, of course, in case it was any better. But the second pass was great. And that was that.
Wow.
Kenny Rogers told me, even though he knew I was beating him up,
yeah,
he went on a gig on a weekend while we were working. And he came in Monday and he said, you know what? I shouldn't bitch about what you worked me hard. He says, when I did that gig, it was cake. My chops were up. It was a piece of cake, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's funny because you look at Kenny. It's funny you bring that up. But I love that album that you did for him. I think it was 1986. But it's funny. Kenny would always, I remember seeing him live, he would always be like, he looked like people would say, is he afraid of the microphone?
Yeah, right.
Right? Because he was afraid of, I think he was afraid of cracking or something. Am I right?
You have a point.
You're right.
You know, and I said, Kenny, sing your lick here. he says, my only lick? I said, yeah, that's the one.
That's so funny.
Yeah. He was a good cat. Yeah. We had a country hit. It did okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I couldn't do the hip stuff with him, you know?
Well, that 1986 album, I think that's the hippest he ever got, you know? I don't remember the title. There was one good song. There's one song in there that says anything at all. I don't know if you remember it. It definitely, it was pushing him, but yeah, he pulled it off. But I can understand what you're saying. He definitely, you could always hear the country in Kenny, which is nothing wrong with that.
And the hit was... something about 20 years ago. It was actually a very good tune. You know, man, he was starting to, his run was the beginning of the end. He was already in the beginning of the end, but he could fill stadiums still, you know.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
He's a very good businessman, smart cat. Yeah, I dug him.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So let's talk about two collaborators that we've interviewed Mark Jordan and Randy Goodrum.
We interviewed Randy.
Yeah. Randy's a great cat, and so's Mark.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
About once every couple months, man. We always have laughs. You know, that album I did with him, Blue Desert, won some poll of the best guitar album that wasn't successful. It's not a guitar album. It's not a guitar album. I mean, you know, and I didn't mean to play solos in every tune. You know, I even asked Carlton to play a solo on one tune, and sometimes this is what happens. He tried for 3 hours, and he wasn't getting anything we liked. He says, fuck it, you play it. So I ended up playing too many solos. I should have had more guys. But, you know, it wasn't the hip changes. I got away with as much as I could. I really thought we had a chance with that record, man, because he's very unique, and the lyrics are great, you know?
Right.
Anyway, way it goes.
Yeah.
And On the Boulevard, you guys wrote together. Did you know that, Ed? Did you realize that they wrote On the Boulevard together, which we love?
That's a great song.
Yeah, that is a great song.
Yeah.
This is Mark at his best with lyrics. Mark can write lyrics, man. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just like the weird melody, actually. I'm sure that's your thing.
How about the count?
That's such a nice little weird thing. It's weird, but it's actually commercial. It's really
How about when the counterpoint melody comes in near the end? There's the da 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 da. I can't get any higher than that, but And then that's going against You and Me, Boulevard. Yeah. Yeah. But then that other
it's
line.
Very clever.
Yeah, that was cool. I forgot how that happened. But however it happened, it was cool. I think me and Rich Page and Mark?
Was it the three of you penned that?
I think Rich Page might have been involved.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
I think so.
That's where the line probably came from. Rich probably thought of that. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I love what you did.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Randy, the jar stuff.
Yeah,
oh, the jar
Randy,
stuff.
Man, I really like that album. And we've got another one that's in the can that I'm, as in like three nights, I'm going to start sending Randy stems. I don't want to mix it. I've been putting off mixing it for like 3 years because I keep getting busy doing other stuff. And look, man, it's vanity. It's not going to make a lot of bread. Spotify's ruined everything, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I said, Randy, look, let me just EQ everything. I'll make you stems. You mix it. So that's what's going to happen. It's good. Mm-hmm. I think you'll like it.
Yeah.
If you like the first one, you'll like it.
Yeah, I love the Codes tune. I mean, I never broke the code, but I love the bass sound. It's not real bass, but did you program that bass sound?
Randy and I programmed everything. Randy's a really good drum programmer, really good. The new album, because we had more real fills to use, the drum program is even better. But the bass sound is the Trillian Jaco bass.
Oh, it does sound growly like Jaco, yeah.
And it's got the slight humanness of the notes kind of swimming a little bit.
Yeah, fretless.
So that's why it doesn't sound like a horrible sample.
Right.
You know, and
is your vocal auto-tuned on that tune? It sounds a little weird there.
I might have overdone it a little.
Yeah, no, it was a thing. It was the style.
But it was never auto-tuned. I just
it's not
got
like you
too
needed
anal.
It. Oh,
yeah,
you did.
Yeah, just when I overdid it. And it might have been overdone on a couple songs on the new record too, man. But I just got lazy, man. I'm just, you know, fucking getting old and singing, man.
I know.
Ah, Jay, send it to me. I'll sing it for you. My pleasure.
Yeah. Hey, all right.
I'd love
to.
He's
a badass, man. Eddie's a badass.
I would love to.
Yeah, he's sang with Chicago. Eddie sang with Chicago.
I'm going to send you the album that I did with Chicago. It's a long story, but I'm going to send it to you. It's this thing that I did for Chicago. Back in 2011, Robert Lamb called me and the producer in New York, I forget his name, a bunch of hit songs called Chicago Éxitos, because I'm bilingual. And I translated
Espanol?
A bunch of their songs in Espanol.
Say, oh, chido,
Sábado. En el parque, creo que fue el 4 de julio.
You got the accent, man.
That's
ridiculous. Oh, yeah. I'm going to send it to you.
Are you half Latino?
Yeah, well, my parents are from Cuba, but I was born here in Jersey.
Of course. You got no accent at all, man.
Yeah, none. Yeah. Somebody asked him if he was British one time. Remember, we were talking to somebody. He said, are you British?
Hey, you know something, man?
What?
You know something, man? You may be the only person that knows what I'm about to say.
What's that?
Do you know what a montuno is?
El montuno. Yeah, bro. Of course.
Okay.
Absolutely.
What do you define it as?
Well, I mean, that's my father's kind of music. That comes from Cuba.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
no,
bro.
No Mexican or no other Spanish. Believe me, I speak a little Spanish, and I got a lot of Mexican pals. I got a lot of pals from all over, Central, South, right?
Right,
okay.
Right.
I mean, name the country, right? And when I watch movies in Spanish, man, I can make out about 10%. That's another hobby of mine. But in any way, nobody knows what montuno means, man. Montuno was the don't, 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 don't groove.
That's right.
That's a montuno.
That's right.
And there's another cat I know from Cuba that says there's a street in Cuba with that name.
Hmm.
And that's where it may have come from. Who knows?
Maybe.
Yeah, man. But of course you'd know. You're the first cat I've ever met that knows.
Wow, look at that. Wow, that's great.
I think Lenny Castro, no, it was Alex Acuna told me.
Oh, yeah.
Is he Cuban also?
He's not Cuban.
But he's a musician and he knows tons of Cubans.
Oh, okay.
Right. I think he's Mexican. I'm not sure.
Badrena's Cuban, right? Remember Manolo Badrena who played with Weather Report? He's Cuban, I think, isn't he? You know, don't you know Manolo Badrena, Eddie?
I don't know.
The name
that
sounds
cat.
Familiar.
You guys?
No? Yeah, the name sounds familiar.
After after Alex Acuna with Weather Report, you know, the Jocko albums, the Heavy Weather, he's the percussionist, Manolo Pedrana.
Okay.
Man, there was a Latino drummer on this Latin gig I was playing, this little cat named Tutti. This is like when I'm like 18.
Oh, okay.
And this fucking guy could play, man. And that's where I learned the Latin grooves, and it's a whole other thing, and it's so cool.
Carlos Vega, he was of Spanish descent, yeah. Right? Where was he from?
Yep. Carlos Vega.
Cuba.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, Vega's Cuban.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if Tata Vega is Cuban. I never asked her.
Oh, Tata, I remember her. Yeah. No, I don't know. Don't know.
Sings her ass off, man.
Still, huh?
I don't know, but I bet.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you just reminded me, you did a lot of work with Candy Staten, didn't you?
How did you know that?
Uh-huh.
You read a lot of album
Eddie's
covers.
A walking encyclopedia.
Are you kidding? Bro, I was Yacht Rock before they coined the term, but I remember, yeah, I know you were on there. Did you write the Young Hearts Run Free or something?
I didn't write
anything. Oh, okay.
No, but dig this. Okay, Ray Parker is another one of my very good friends. We sat next to each other more than any two guitar players. We were perfect for each other. It was like one brain, four arms, and two guitars. And Ray was, I just saw him the other night for dinner, man. I love this cat. Well, his best friend growing up was a guy named Sylvester Rivers, who arranged all those songs.
Ah.
And this cat is brilliant, man. He's worldly brilliant. And I talk to him all the time. And as a matter of fact, one of those songs that maybe that song is in the movie Studio 54, and it goes on for like 5 or 6 minutes over the credits at the end. And we were never paid neighboring rights for that because we weren't given credit per song. Mm. This is a whole other story and another flow of income for musicians that has become really important since there's no other way to make a living now for most cats, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah. So, Wow. Yeah, Candy Staten, I remember those records well.
Wow. You played on the Young Hearts. You played
had
on that?
To. Yeah. I played on all of it.
And Donna Summer, I know you were involved with Donna too, correct?
Hot Stuff, Bad Girls, MacArthur Park, and many
wait,
more.
Wait, MacArthur Park, is that you doing the solo?
That's me.
I knew it. Woo!
Okay, you want a great story?
Please.
Here we
go.
That's
what we're here for.
Okay. You got to interview Greg Matheson at some point.
Oh, I know the name.
Okay, Greg and I went to college together. We are still so very close. We talk all the time. And I helped Greg get going in the studios. So he's an excellent arranger, and he started getting a lot of work doing that. And so he was working for Giorgio, producing stuff. And Giorgio says, I want to do MacArthur Park as a 17-minute song. I want it to be the whole side, right?
Wow. Yeah.
So Greg says, yeah, no problem. He says, I want it done in 5 days. And Greg says, I can't write string parts and horn parts, and let alone the rhythm parts. This is going to be complex, man. This is going to and do recording every day, you know? So Greg stayed up for, he says, Giorgio says, if you don't want to do it, I'll get somebody else.
Ooh.
Greg stayed up. This is the problem with arrangers, man, that are busy. They don't sleep.
Wow.
So what does that mean? What does that mean? What drug comes into the picture? Blow.
Okay. Cocaine.
Right. Okay. So Greg and I bought these. We were really into wines back then, and we bought these vintage 1966 Bordeaux and Burgundies that were like, we got a real good deal, like cases of it. Greg is drinking the shit out of the bottle while he's doing blow, staying up all night writing charts for this.
Ooh,
every night, going to the date, drink beers, play the whole session, you know, do a double session, go back home and start writing again for the next section.
Oh, no.
You listen to that song and you see how complex it is.
Yeah.
And man, he never would do that again, man. That just tore him to shit.
I can imagine. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, it's the life of the arranger, man. You know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I remember doing the solo, too. It was fun.
Excellent, Beryl.
Thank you, man.
Oh, my God, bro. I tell you, I, like I said, Joe knows. Whenever we hear one of your solos, it's so signature. I guess, oh, that's Jay Grin.
Boom. I don't play like anybody else because I never copied anybody.
That's part right. of that is the Wire Choir thing, right, Jay? How did that come about, the Wire Choir?
That came about with me and Foster. Foster produced an album for J.P. Morgan. It was his first production. And we decided that on a solo, I would harmonize it. I think we did. It was either that or somewhere right after that. But then I said, okay, well, let's try three parts on some of these things. And we would. And I'd play the first part, and I'd write out the second and third part. And sometimes there would be some interval changes that weren't making it that I would change on the fly. But, yeah, I did that a lot, man, and it was fun.
Yeah, that's part of your signature, for sure.
The harmony parts, the fingering can get really weird. So it was good for me because it made me play fingerings. I'm going to show all that stuff when I do the YouTube channel.
Yeah, absolutely. You must.
I'm going to break each one down, show it in slow motion, play it in slow motion, you know, the whole bit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So Jay, what's happening now? Are you very busy? What's the story? What's going on now with you?
I'm always busy.
Yeah.
I get called. I get hired to play solos. I get hired to. Well, when we were doing the roads, that took a whole lot of time. Mm-hmm. Now I'm doing interviews galore to help pitch the E and help pitch the video channel. And I would start the Jar Stems. I've been waiting to start the Jar Stems for like 5 months. But then something comes up, and I'm back in the studio working on something else.
That's awesome.
So as soon as I played, I was going to start the Jar Stems after I talked to you guys, but because of Janice want me to do the morning parts, so I'm going to do those first, then the jar, then the channel and the autobiography and all that.
Awesome.
But I'm available, man. I mean, if somebody wants to, I want to be made to play guitar. So if somebody wants to hire me, I play.
That's awesome. I know you've worked with a lot of recent modern yacht artists like State Cows.
Yeah. Their mother, Stefan and Pepe, the two brothers, mm-hmm. Their mother runs my life.
No shit.
From Umeå, Sweden.
Oh.
Kirsten.
Oh,
that's Kirsten. Oh,
okay.
Runs my life for 27 years.
How fucking cool is that? Holy shit.
I show up in Umeå in the 1994 tour, and her and a family are in a record shop where I'm signing albums. And they've all got, T-shirts they made up with my albums and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Sherwood Ball said, do you know she started a website on you? And I said, what's a website? It took off. And ever since then, she knows all about the music business. I've taught her everything.
Wow.
So she and her boys are working on this book with me. The guitar, keyboard, and a book, and some drum stuff. Every Saturday night, we're doing Zoom, and I'm telling them what to write down, and then they're coming up with ideas, too.
We've got
a brand new chord vocabulary. This is how it all started. Chords are named improperly. Arrangers don't know how to write down the exact voicing to get it played in the order of notes the way you write it. Hmm. Well, I've come up with a way to do that. I've been using it for years. Wow. So that started the book, but dig this. It's going to get to one part where there could be possibly 1,000 rhythm guitar parts written, and I'm going to play them all.
Wow.
Dig that. How weird is that? It's going to be a fucking, for anybody that's in a band or wants to be a studio player,
right.
And after they learn all these rhythm parts, man, they'll never be short of a rhythm part ever. They'll learn a lot. Plus,
cool.
I'm going to play shit I've never played because we're running a random program.
Right.
I've been listening to the Funk Channel for about 5 months. And since the guitar parts are always looped, James Brown stuff and a lot of other stuff, I write them down. I've got about 10 pages of about 10 songs a page, and all that's going to be used. Mm. Yeah. Really so great phenomenal. Stuff, man. Cool.
Jay, in the 70s, when Motown moved to LA, you did work with Motown, right?
A lot.
Really?
Yep. Tons.
Did you ever encounter James Jamerson on a session?
Yes.
You did.
He moved out here, man.
Please tell me about that. I'm a big, big fan of James Jamerson.
The nicest cat you'd ever want to know. just a sweetheart. The poor cat was a hard juicer and probably drugs, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't live too long, man. But when he was out here, he worked. And of course, we dug the cat, man. A sweetheart cat, man. Just great.
Did you realize what he was doing back then? Now all these, everybody's just all on top of his thing now.
They are.
Did you realize then that it was really special, that the way he sat in a mix, or the way that he, you know, chose to play rhythms was really special?
Of course, man. The cat was the father of it.
Yeah, certainly.
And who was the drummer? Was it Benny?
Benny Benjamin.
Yeah. Those cat's pockets are unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable.
You know, some of these, there's a bunch of songs that are out there where people have gone into studios, into tape vaults at midnight, and copied tracks and put these tracks out on the net, where you can get the isolated tracks of songs.
Oh yeah, I've heard them.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where Rick Beato got Carlton's Kid Charlemagne from.
Oh wow. Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, it's not a really good thing to do.
No,
but,
I know.
Yeah, you know. So I've got an 8-track of a Motown tune, Ain't No Mountain High Enough, with the individual tracks. It's interesting.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure.
It was a little sloppy, man, you know.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get to jam with Glenn Campbell?
No, who was that?
Glenn Campbell, you never got to jam with him?
No.
Really?
No, who's that? No.
You're kidding.
Is he an L.A. cat?
Glenn Campbell.
I don't know who he is.
Glenn Campbell? You're teasing me.
Oh, yeah, I thought you said Greg Campbell.
Oh, no, Glenn Campbell, Wichita Lineman.
No, it's funny.
No, you never got to jam with him.
Nope, he was gone out of the studios. But I'll tell you what his big contribution was. He taught all the L.A. cats that to use a capo on acoustic guitar instead of playing barred chords that don't sound good. If you use a capo and you can play chords with at least one or two open strings, that's what acoustic guitar is supposed to sound like. So he introduced the cats to the capo. And what a great thing he did for everybody. That was a Nashville trick, you know.
Ah, wow, Joe, did
or
you know
a country
that?
Thing.
Yeah, the Wrecking Crew. Yeah, he's part of the Wrecking Crew. Those guys had so many innovative things. Like Tommy Tedesco was in there. Carol Kay was in there. That was that whole era.
Carol Kay can be a drag. She's bitter. Hold on one second. I just spilled something. Hold on.
Uh-oh.
My fake beer, man, was I took a sip and it went into overflow land.
Your fake beer?
Not a big deal. Yeah. Buckler. I quit juicing, man, a long time ago.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You get old, man, you know, and I don't miss it.
Oh, you know? Yeah, no, of course. No, the heavy drinking shit? Oh, no, that's... Ugh.
I never was heavy, you know, but I don't miss weed. I don't miss any of that shit.
I hear you,
I'm a
brother.
Fucking teetotaler, man.
There you go. Green tea. Are you into green tea?
I drink green and black together for the buzz when I get up.
There you go.
Two and a half cups, man. Get me going.
Love it. I love the green tea. Love it.
Oh, I'm
addicted. Addicted. And it's good. It's good
Absolutely.
For you.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Coffee hurts my stomach, man, and it wires me to the point where I want to, like, tear something apart and rebuild it, you know? And I'm terrible
at that.
Can't
be all
shit.
Bad.
What?
That can't be all bad, but yeah, if you put shit together wrong, forget about it.
Well, I'm not good at that stuff. That's the big problem. You know, I'm good with electronic stuff, man, but don't give me a soldering iron. I'll tell you where the problem is, but you fix it.
Yeah.
You know, I fucked up everything, man, when I get a soldering iron in my hands. Look out.
So about guitars, do you do your own setups on your guitars? Like, what do you, you do?
Yeah, I'm real anal, man. You know, I got to have my hands dry. Everybody's got a different thing. My hands have to be dry and clean. And, you know, when I need guitar repair, of course I take it to a repairman, but no, man, otherwise it's just me, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you could do intonation and all that, get your neck straight and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm like you know.
Me too. I'm like a mad scientist. Because I feel like I have to have it set up the way I feel it, you know.
If
having
guitar,
some guy set it up.
If the guitar doesn't feel good in your hands, forget it.
It's got to disappear, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a guitar with an Evertune bridge on it I use for rhythm exclusively. Do you know what the Evertune bridge is?
No, no. What is that?
You can't play the guitar out of tune. It's impossible to play it out of tune.
Really?
It's a system of springs where you can adjust the spring. If you want to bend strings, you can pull the adjustment up to the point just before the string bends. And when you play chords, it'll be perfectly in tune. But to really do that right, I don't bend strings on the rhythm guitar. It's just for rhythm and chord melody. So I back the bending down where I can bend the string like up, you know, like an inch and nothing changes.
Wow.
Every note is perfectly in tune at all times. Rhythm guitar.
Buzz Featon did like a tuning system to like improve that too, right?
Different thing.
It's a different thing. How does that work? How does that work?
It's the way the nuts cut.
The nuts staggered, right?
Yes.
Kind of like a bridge. You know how the bridge has kind of staggered for the.
It's a good system, but the problem is you got to use a tuner. You don't tune it like you can't just tune it like you tune regularly. There's notes that have to be tuned off, you know, a couple cents.
Oh.
So you have to have a tuner that is set up for Buzz's system, and, you know, you can't be without a tuner. That's not, you know, and it's got to be on turned on to his mode. But most of the tuners have that.
Right.
Wow.
For me, that wasn't the way to go. So I never, you know.
So what are your favorite guitars now? Are you still playing the Bossa stuff?
Yep. I play the Bossa for the solo stuff. And I play either this Music Man Game Changer with the Evertune on it or a Valley Arts Strat.
Oh, you still have a Valley Arts?
Yeah, man. Wow, I picked it out of 50 before a NAMM show one year, and I got a really good one. But now the tuning's
you and Luke
not
like those.
What's that?
You and Luke like those at some point. Luke was using those too at some point.
He was. Yeah. I'm going to put an Evertune on that guitar. I'm going to take the tremolo bar off because I just use it for rhythm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm going to stick an Evertune on that. That's something I need to do, and I'm not going to do that myself because I'll fucking ruin the guitar. There's
Do you not like anything vintage? Do you not like old Strats or something like that? Do you not like a 62 Strat doesn't feel good in your hand? Do you not care about that stuff?
I don't care about that stuff, and I'll tell you why. Blindfold me, hand me guitars. Don't tell me what they are. Put the same gauge string on, you know, that's a 10 set that's custom. I use a 9 set on some guitars, but the real fair way to do it is to put a 10 set, get the action real low, and hand them to me one at a time. And let me play them and don't tell me what it is. And I'll guarantee you there'll be old guitars and new guitars that I'll like, and there'll be a lot that I don't like. Because the second I put that in my hand, if the neck shape's wrong, I'm done before I even play it.
Right.
You know, and then after I start playing it, will it play in tune? You know, and does it play easy? And does it fit my body? Does everything's got to work out, you know?
Yeah, you're more about the tool than any mystique or anything like that.
Right.
It's about the tool. Yeah.
When I pick up the guitar and I plug into the amp, I got to have my sound. If I don't have my sound, all I'm thinking about is something's wrong, you know?
Right.
It's like when you go sit in somewhere, hey, man, play my guitar, you know? It's like, okay, well, it's going to probably be about one-third as good as it would be if I was playing my setup, you know?
It's your voice, too. Like, what do you usually take? If you're taking something, I mean, do you have a pedal board? Do you have a big pedal board? Or you just have the one little, I remember you had the orange squeezer thing that you always talked about.
I was the first guy to have a pedal board in the studios. I built it. Yep. I built a switch box and Velcroed down all my effects onto this 5-foot piece of plywood, 5 by about 4. And this was before LEDs. So the drag was, I didn't know what was on.
Right.
I had 6 buttons, right? And this was to bypass, so I wouldn't have to run through all the effects, pick up all the noise, just run the effects the way I wanted to. And I couldn't change the order because, you know, it was like old school, man. It was just a box with 6 ins and outs, and they were all in order. And if I wanted to change anything, I had to change the jacks. But that actually got me work on the Motown stuff. Get that guy with all those effects, you know?
Oh, cool.
Then I was going to build another pedal board, and I was going to do it with a mixer. And I was going to have a patch bay, and I was going to do it really right. And I was going to have both serial and parallel routing. And that brings up a whole other subject that you're going to find out about on my YouTube channel. I can't give that one away yet.
Okay. All right. Okay.
But when all you right. guys see it and right. get it, you're going to go, that makes sense.
Awesome.
You're going to love it, man. It's a discovery I made many years ago, man.
Wow.
So thankfully. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Jay, man, listen, what can I say, bro? Talking with you, this has been, for Joe and I, a dream come true. I know Absolutely. That may sound corny, but it's the truth, my friend. I've been looking forward to this for a long time, Jay.
Ed, Joe, anytime, man.
Love you, my friend. I want to thank man. You for being so gracious with your time.
Oh, man, cats, no problem.
Love you, my friend. And keep the fire.
I hope you guys got a bunch of useful stuff out of this.
Sure. Are
you?
Of course.
Oh, man. Yeah, we covered a lot of ground here. I'm so happy.
Even if it's just for my benefit, I'll just listen to it as I go to sleep every night.
Just don't tug one out.
I love it.
Did you guys interview Luke ever?
Yeah. We had him not too long ago. Yeah.
Good. That had to be funny as shit.
Oh yeah, he's a trip.
Oh yeah, he's much more bawdy than even you.
Yeah. Oh yeah, man. I when Luke and I are together, it gets pretty out.
I'm
That's
sure.
when it gets really out.
He was telling me before you go. He was telling me about a session. I don't know who did it. I think it was that you guys were doing a session together, and all of a sudden somebody pulled down their pants. And was all that right. you or him?
All right, I'll tell you the story.
Go ahead.
Okay, we were doing a session at Larrabee for Juice Newton. And it was before she had a hit. And Larrabee, the studio that's the second studio in the building, the walkway between the control room and the big room is like a vocal ISO booth, and you can't see if anybody's in there unless you're way down by the front of the glass. So the first thing that happens is it's 10 a.m. We just listened to a playback. These people came from New York. They didn't know us from shit, right?
Right.
So Jeff Beccaro takes his pants off.
Oh,
and
shit.
Jeff Beccaro's walking ass naked towards his drums. This is the first thing that happens, okay?
Oh, God.
Yeah, man. Okay, so then I made the mistake. Okay, we're done with the double date. There's like 10 minutes to go, and we got one more tune to do, and I play the first 16 bars finger-picking on electric by myself. So I make the mistake of asking the cast. I said, look, anybody working tonight? I got a 7 o'clock. I got to get out of here. I got to eat. So let's hurry up and get out of here. Let's cut the sucker and go.
Right.
And so I says, anybody else got to work? We'll go eat. And nobody was working that night. Right. So that was the excuse to fuck with me. So the first thing that happens, you know, so the 12 or 16 bar intro, I'm playing it. Right. And Jeff and Luke and Foster, whoever, they're throwing cigarettes and matchbooks, and they're bouncing off my strings, right?
Right.
Okay. So after three times, I go, cats, come on, man, stop. So now I know the part. The part was written out, but I've played it enough now where I don't need to look at the chart until the groove starts.
Right.
So Lukather, I don't know this. He's in the gobo next to me. He takes his pants off and is inching closer and closer and closer to me, but I've got my eyes shut and I'm looking down, right? So he knows when I have to look up. So right at the point when I have to look up, he spreads his ass cheeks to about 6 inches from my fucking nose, right?
Oh, my gosh.
And I laughed so fucking hard. I fell off the chair, man. I had to watch out not to hurt my guitar. I mean, I could count his bunghole hairs.
Oh, my God. Holy shit.
Yeah, that's Luke.
Great. Great story.
I never did that to him. I should have done that to him.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now we got it straight.
That certainly speaks to that camaraderie that you develop when you're with guys in the studio all the time, right? You become lifelong friends. With crazy shit like that.
You know, it's funny you say that, man, because every time we get together, we all say the same thing. It was the best time of our lives.
Absolutely.
We all say it, man. I mean, a typical hang is me and Rit and Luke and Ray Parker. You know, that was a common hang. We would go to dinner every couple, 3 months. We still do. And it's like always, more stories.
That's
you know,
awesome.
And just the camaraderie, man, and just the, and every, the bands, the rhythm sections were always so fucking good. It was always Jeff or Ed Green or Keltner on drums or Carlos or Gad. Oh, man. You know, Gad came out here a lot for a while. And always great bass players. Hungate, Abraham Laboriel.
Yeah.
Mike Picaro. Oh, man. Scott Edwards. There's a great bass player.
I remember that name.
Yeah. Black Cat, man. And the sweetest, nicest fucking cat. So then Foster and all the keyboard players, Omardian, you know.
Omardian, oh yeah.
Yeah, I still talk to Michael, man. He, you know, I still talk to all these cats. We just love each other to death, man, yeah. You know.
That's great.
You just can't, you can't describe the feeling that we had. It was magical.
Yeah.
You know.
You guys shared this golden age. You know, you
run it down. Right. Run down the chart. First take or second take. Next tune. You know, either we're reading the parts or coming up with them, man. We come up with shit on the spot. Somebody plays, Ray plays something, I work off his part. I hear Omardian or Foster play something on piano. I catch part of that. You know, immediately we're all listening. We're all listening while we're playing, and we're all feeding off each other. And that's what so many great things happen out of nowhere. Just nowhere, you know?
So you guys were doing carrying on the tradition, like I said before, of the Funk Brothers and the Wrecking Crew. Did you guys ever coin a name for yourselves for that era that you guys were doing it the same way?
No, we
Somebody's
didn't.
Somebody's got to come up with that.
The Bungholes.
Sounds perfect. It's perfect.
And with that.
And with that.
No, actually, one more story.
Go ahead.
Do you guys know who Phil DeGree is?
Phil DeGree.
Eddie?
You know, no. No, that does not ring a bell.
He plays a 17-string guitar. It's a guitar and harp combination. It's a 7-string guitar with a high A and 10 harp strings tuned to A flat or D flat. I can't remember. I don't remember what the tuning is. He's Ted Green and Lenny Bro combined, and Chet Atkins.
Whoa.
Go to guitarp.com. GUITARP.
Okay.
Okay, these cats live in New Orleans, man, and they just got pounded, man, all of them.
Oh,
wow.
And there's
two
other guitar players that are motherfuckers that are friends of Phil's that became friends of mine. And see, Phil and I had a thing right off the bat. We both studied with Ted Green. And we met when Phil came to L.A. to play, and Ted Green was there to hang. Vi came, Russell Malone, Sid Jacobs, Dan Sawyer, Jim Fox, Tim May, Tommy Rotella. And the place was loaded with guitar players. John Paisano ran the thing. And Phil is this mad genius, man. You're going to freak when you hear him. So anyway, the other two other guitar players that are friends of Phil's that are now friends of mine, great players, Cranston Clemens and Jay Griggs. We all have an email chain going, and these guys are the funniest cats you'll ever meet, ever, ever. The humor's so outside. And we're the four bungholes.
Love that.
Now, we may start a YouTube channel. These cats are just so non into that, but it's going to happen because I'm going to make it happen. It's just going to be totally left field humor.
That's funny.
Anyway, listen to Phil play.
Okay, for sure.
It's Phil DeGree is the way it's spelled, but it's pronounced DeGree. Just go to guitarp.com.
Okay.
You guys dug Ted Green, Lenny Bro? You guys dig him?
Yeah.
Those
absolutely.
Cats?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this cat is them, like in the most humorous mode, with all the technique And he's a freak. He's incredible. Yeah. You'll eat it up.
Are you a Matheny fan?
Oh, of course, man.
Yeah, I mean, he's got that crazy, that 42-string Picasso guitar thing, too.
He's ridiculous, man. He's a freak show, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And that drummer, man.
Oh, yeah, Antonio Sanchez.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I went to hear them one night, man, and I hardly ever go out to gigs, but I had to make this hang. That drummer gets more sounds out of a drum set than I've ever heard anybody get, ever. And, man, the groove is so good. And after the gig, I said, Pat, man, where did you find this cat? He says, and I said, man, you know, what's the story? He says, my life changed when I met him.
Yeah.
My musical life changed. And I said, I get it. Oh, and it was also the bass player, Black Cat, that plays great upright and Fender.
Christian McBride?
Yes, man. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I was knocked out. I was floored.
Wow, yeah. It was just the trio thing, I guess.
Oh, then, man, right? It was just the trio. It didn't. Yeah. I'm glad it was just the trio. I usually want to hear piano play changes. You know, I like that too. Yeah, I missed it typically, but because of the intricacy, without the extra instrument, everything was crystal clear, man, and we were real up front on the stage, you know, right in front of the stand, so we could hear it acoustically except for the upright. But, man, it was the best it could be because everything could be heard, literally.
Yeah, that's awesome. Great.
All the nuances, man. That was a good night.
Yeah, I love watching him. I had the pleasure of talking to him not long ago. I actually found a guitar for him, and I had an old number from a friend because I knew Larry Grenadier, who played bass with him for a while. And I had a number, and I was shaking in my boots, and I called, and he actually picked up, and I talked to him for like a half hour about this guitar, and he wound up not getting it at all. But it was really, really an honor for me to talk.
Oh, that's great, man.
Just like it's an honor to talk to you, Jay Grady.
Guys.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah.
You are the goods.
Hey, man, I'm just another one of the cats, man. That's all.
Absolutely. You certainly are.
You know, everybody's got their groove.
That's true.
Right?
But we love yours, babe.
Cats, I love you, cats. We can do this again.
Oh, we'd love to do this again.
We'd love to.
We're just scratching the surface here.
I know.
Even if we don't record it, I just want to talk to you again for an hour and a half.
No, man, you got to record it because I may forget. And next time I won't be picking up my nut cheese when I'm talking to you, Kat. Hold on, let me get a quick whiff.
That's why we didn't Zoom this. Because I'm actually naked from the waist down anyway, so I keep running to the toilet.
Oh, shit.
All right. So with that, guys, we'll definitely leave it.
All right, cats. Okay.
Love you. Love you, cats.
No, thank you. We'll talk again.
All right. Ciao, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Eddie Gans on the Yacht Rock Show podcast. Thanks for listening. And tune in next week for more of your Yacht Rock favorites.